Okay. So this is Alyssa Cooper again. I have 1 minute after the hour, and we have a very packed agenda today, so I think we should get started. I didn't hear from any of the interpreters that we needed more time. So hopefully people are on and joining. I see that Alice is writing down the roll call. So the idea that we had here with the roll call was that since we can see the names of the people in the Adobe Connect meeting, we wouldn't actually run through the full roll call. Alice will continue to make the full list, and we can check it at the end to make sure we didn't miss anyone who was actually on the call. But I would like to hear from ICG participants who are not in the Adobe Connect meeting room. If you're not in the Adobe Connect meeting room, if you could let us know right now, just say your name, please.
Hello, this is Dryden. I am going to join the Adobe Connect room. I'm just not in yet. Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Thank you, Heather. Anybody else who's not in the Adobe Connect meeting room?
This is Milton. I'm in the meeting room, but I'm not being shown as a in the notes as somebody who's present.
Thank you, Milton.
There we go.
Hi, this is Russ Mundy. Same thing as Milton.
And Daniel, come back plus one. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I think we have most people accounted for now. Alice will continue to update the list, and we'll verify it at the end. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I will give one caveat right at the beginning, which is that it's 5 o'clock in the morning where I live, please be nice today. As Alice and I mentioned on the mailing list, we're going to use the raise hand functionality in the Adobe meeting room to run the queue. So you should have a little figure with his hand raised at the top of your window. If you want to get in the queue at any point, please raise your hand. And if you are not in the Adobe meeting room, feel free to just let us know by voice that you want to be in the queue. Obviously, you can't raise your hand. We have a large group. We have 30 people. We have 2 hours. We have half a dozen topics to get through. So I would ask people when you are speaking to be brief and to the point. We want to make sure that everyone has a chance to get their words in. We wanted to start today, I think, with some introductions of the people who were not present with us in London. Those of us who were there got to know each other and introduce ourselves, talked about where we were, where we work, where we're from, who appointed us here, maybe a little bit about how you got appointed, and whether we are taking the ICANN funding for travel was the other thing we talked about. So if you are not in London, if you could go ahead and provide a brief introduction, that would be very helpful. Or if you were also not on the call, the people who were on the call did introductions in London as well. So go ahead if you are not in London, and please introduce yourself.
Yes, hello. This is Jan Dier from Brazil speaking.
Hi, Jan Dier. We can hear you. Yes.
Yes. Good morning to you all. I just would like to express my satisfaction in joining this group. Well, you can certainly count on me to help the ICG engage governments from Latin America and the Caribbean in this exercise. Just a quick introduction. As I said, I've been a Brazilian career diplomat since 2000. I'm currently heading the unit at the Ministry of External Relations of Brazil, responsible for intergovernmental negotiations. Yeah, I'm the Brazilian representative at the GAC. Just let me say that in my view, the intention of the GAC to participate in this process by nominating a chair and four additional members is not to outnumber the representatives of other sectors, but rather to provide a balanced representation of governmental interests and ensure that geographic and linguistic diversity are duly reflected. And let me assure you that I fully understand that the work of developing proposals will be happening not in the ICG, but in the communities, and that our participation in the ICG does not replace the need for the GAC engagement in the community processes. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we also had one or two other GAC members who were not present in London. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, this is Paul Jackson speaking. We have raised our hands here and waiting for a call, Alyssa, to, that we should speak, but okay, I'm speaking anyways. it's 5 a.m. in the morning.
Sorry, I thought you could speak ahead. Go ahead, Pat.
So, Patrik Feldström, I'm chair of ESSAC. I'm appointed through the ESSAC appointment process, just like Russ Mundy. I work, my day job is for NetNode in Sweden. We run Internet Connect Points. We also run one of the root name servers and run DNS for a number of ccTLDs specifically. Regarding funding for travel, yes, some of the funding that I get as the chair of ESSAC is from ICANN, but some of the funding is also by sort of through my day job. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Next, we have Michael Meeble.
Yeah, hi, this is Michael. I work for the European Commission. I'm German-born and based in Brussels. I've been involved in internet matters since the 90s of the last century, including ICANN and WSIS. I've been starting in European policy on network security and setting up the European Network and Information Security Agency. And I've been preparing the framework and the conditions for setting up the European top-level domain .eu. I've also been responsible for the last policy papers of the European Commission regarding internet governance. I've been nominated through the GAC nominating process. I have not requested travel support for Istanbul, but I might request partial travel support for future meetings.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Do we have anyone else who wants to introduce themselves? Okay. So with that, I think I will turn it over to Joe. He is next on the agenda to talk about the chair appointments and roles. Joe, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you. As I sent out in the note last night, the voting was completed. Alyssa was unanimously voted the chair. There was an exceedingly tight race for vice chair with obviously all of the candidates being well-respected and well-qualified. But the two vice chairs are Patrick and Mohammed, and thank you to everyone who participated. Congratulations to the chairs, and thank you to Wolf as well. Alyssa, as to the roles, perhaps that might be better discussed a little later, just because we had a roles document that people commented on somewhat favorably, but we're going through a going through a process where we're discussing how to achieve consensus. and there might be a role of the chair in consensus. So I wasn't going to finalize the roles document until we finalized the consensus process, just to make sure that the roles correctly reflected whatever we saw that might be added to the officers' roles in terms of helping us achieve consensus. I think there was an agreement that it was not up to the officers to call consensus, but rather to help us achieve consensus, and I just want to make sure we reflect that correctly, because I think both in London and on the list there was a general feeling that the roles of the officers were much more administrative than decision-making roles, in the sense of helping us come together, helping organize us, helping move us towards the next meeting, and making sure that we're meeting punch lists of agenda items that need to be captured. So perhaps we can save a little time and not dwell on the roles document, and perhaps take that to be an online finalization of that document once we're finished with the consensus process.
Thanks, Joe. That makes perfect sense to me. Anyone else have comments about what Joe is proposing? I don't see any hands raised. So the next item, and thank you very much to Joe for running that process. I think I can only speak for myself, but I'm very happy to continue serving in the chair role, and you know, looking forward to all of you as a participant. So, Alice, if you could we scroll back up to the minutes? Oh, I guess.
Alyssa,
sure.
Alyssa, this is Joe. Could I just add one thing? Toward the very end of the process, Heather kindly chimed in and said that, you know, the GAC would not be voting specifically on something like this, and just a topic that we may need to answer in either the consensus or the officer role concept is, if a group knows they are not going to be participating in a decision on one related aspect of our process, should we consider whether that affects the number necessary for the concept of what is sufficient number of people participating, a quorum concept, if you will. But it just came to mind that if we have five people that aren't participating, or seven people that say they're not going to participate in a part of the process, does that affect the way we think of what is enough people to be in the process?
James?
Hi, Alyssa. Thanks. James Loyal speaking for the transcript. And yes, I want to echo Joe's last question. I was also intrigued by the message yesterday from Heather about GAC participation and the nature of the participation, and would like to know how that will affect our decision-making process, particularly how we will determine whether or not consensus has been reached. And whether or not we should just, consider these seats to be abstentions on matters of what we call narrow questions or administrative issues. So maybe when we get to that part in our agenda, we could ask, I hate to put Heather on the spot, but maybe she could elaborate a little bit on her message yesterday and perhaps let us know how she envisions the GAC delegation participating in some of these decision-making, consensus-building activities. Thanks.
Thanks, James. We will put Heather on the spot later. So, Jean-Jacques is not able to have his audio right now and has a note about compulsory voting, but hopefully, so we have an item on the agenda coming up soon on the consensus process, so hopefully we can talk about that then, and we're going to keep working on the audio for Jean-Jacques. I've made a note of it. Anyone else on this topic before we move on? Okay. So the next item on the agenda was minutes approval. You can see on the screen we have four documents that have been out for comment and approval for a long time now. The transcript from our first call in July, the minutes of each of the first days of the London face-to-face meeting, which were produced by Samantha, and also the matrix that specifies all of our information about ourselves. And so these have been out for a long time. My intent for today was to see if anyone has objections to approving any of these documents. And if not, I think we can consider them approved and have the ICANN folks get them up on the website. So any objections to approving any of these four documents? Quo.
It seems they missed my name in the report.
In which one?
Liaison. Liaison. The liaison only this the Alice. They missed my name there.
Okay, I'm sorry. In the matrix document.
In the page you just show off here, the preliminary report on the July 10th.
Oh, I see. On the phone call in July. Did you attend the phone call in July?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So we can work with Alice to get that one fixed. Thank you. Russ Mundy.
Thanks. On the matrix, I had missed this earlier. I will be requesting ICANN travel support in the closure section.
Thank you. Samantha, please note that. We'll get that fixed. Anyone else? Mohammed.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. just to ensure that I didn't understand what you proposed well. So you're proposing now that we finalize and approve the documents were in discussion in this call? For clarity, please.
Yes, the call transcript, the minutes from day one and day two of the face-to-face meeting and the matrix. Those four documents.
Okay, thank you. That's fine.
Joe.
Yeah, just a clarification that at times I may request partial funding for like a hotel or something, so I just want to be correct on that. And then the other thing which I will send a slight text edit to is while we will be representing ICC basis, we have also committed to do outreach to organizations that are not part of ICC basis but with whom we have relationships just to keep them informed of the process. So we'd like that reflected as well. But I can send Alice a sentence to that effect.
Thank you, Joe. Anyone else? Okay, so Alice and Sam will make those changes, and we will get these documents posted on the website. Thanks all for your reviews that you did. And moving on, our next topic is the consensus process. So I will turn this over to Wolf Ulrich. I think we have him on the call now.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, thanks. So we have on screen the version number 2 of the IG guidelines for decision making, also the draft. And what I would like to do today is smooth as possible during that time we have at the startup again with you.
I'm sorry, Wolf. We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Is it possible for you to speak up a little bit or closer to your microphone?
Hello, is it better?
Even so?
Even better.
Oh, can you hear me better now? Okay. So, I would like to discuss with you the version number 2 as much as possible as we can during that time we have available today. What I tried, is to incorporate as much as I could and as I also commented on in the past, your comments you have handed to me, but not all of them, because, there are still some major topics, I would say, which we have to discuss in. Just I would like all of you, to remind you that the draft here is based on what I took from the working group guidelines of the GNSO with regards to finding consensus and or decision making. And in the part which is related to consensus finding, I try to advise you to what you are doing. Draft and especially the procedure of finding decisions is related to is just pointing to two levels of I call it here recommendation, finding recommendation. In the GNSO it's called, and also in open CIGF it's called, on the one hand, full consensus, which means 100% consensus in the group, and the other thing is consensus. So while we had this discussion and also some comments on the list, consensus may be consensus, and there's nothing else than consensus, and all else is even is not consensus. So I call it, I'll find a recommendation by consensus, which is related to 100% consensus, and recommendation, which would mean a kind of minority view, which should be expressed often. So one of the questions here is still related where a borderline should be drawn between those two. What does it mean, minority view? Can we express that in terms of quantity, of numbers of members here in of the group, or in terms of quality, that means related to specific groups or stakeholders which are represented here on this group, or should we relate to both, or how can we make progress here in this mindset. The other thing is related to the principle, and if you could go to page number 2, I think the principles are laid out here. Yes, thank you. Here we are. So there are two proposals. The one which starts from the beginning of that proposal, and the alternative proposal, one which came in from Yari. The first one came in from Martin, that's from Yari, the other one. So what I understand here, the difference is mainly to avoid the differentiation in terms of substantive and non-substantive issues, to find out what is this, what does it mean. On the other hand, it seems to me relatively similar. those principles. And the discussion is, well, whether we can decide upon which of those code parts we could choose for this document. What I also put in is to figure out that the group is going to act, that means it's going to find decisions, and should do that, not to decide on, or to designate that, not on the mailing list, but prepare preparatory work to be done on the mailing list and where else, but we should have really take decisions or conclusions at meetings. That means meetings, face-to-face meetings or calls like this one. And for this also we should have a quorum, which is going to be decided. Quorum is in the genus always normally is necessary also with a majority of views, but also covers at least the minimum availability of the different stakeholder groups. At least one vote is a per stakeholder group. So the question here is, what does it mean with regard to the ISG? Do we have different stakeholder groups here, or do we relate to the three customer lines in this regard, for example? So this question should be dealt with itself. So I think these are, from my point of view at the time being, the major issues we have still, and I would like to open the floor for discussion.
I have Paul in the queue. Yeah. Or if you want to run the queue, Wolf, that's fine.
Yes, I can follow the queue. So Paul, I see Paul.
Hi. Paul Wilson here. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I didn't quite catch the reason why we're considering version of the document and not version 3. I added a few comments to version 3 where I, in particular, in connection with the principles, tried to suggest a few changes to the wording that would take into account what I saw was quite a few of the comments that were made during the long discussion about this, but I'm not sure if that's appropriate or whether I should be putting those into version 2 and what exactly is happening with the versioning here.
Or maybe I'm just wrong, Paul. Well, I mean version 3, and I think it's also up on the Adobe screen. So we are talking about definitely version 3, which I put to the Dropbox last night.
I think that's version 2 on the screen.
Oh. Alicia, can you comment on that, please? Alicia, I see your hand.
Sorry. Alice is actually projecting right now, I believe. Not me. So yeah. I'm out of control of what's being shown on the screen.
Okay. I've actually given scroll control to everyone so you can navigate through the document during the discussion. You should be able to scroll right now.
But in terms of choosing what you're actually projecting, that was
yes,
that was your choice, yeah?
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the question is whether we're looking at version 2 or version 3.
Okay. We're projecting the most recent version, the one Wolf referred to, right before.
Yes.
Call. Yes.
Yes. Right, indeed.
You're projecting version 3.pdf, whereas there's a version 3.doc. A doc file on the Dropbox, which I have made some edits to. So that's the confusion.
Yes. You edited this like an hour ago, yeah?
Yeah, in the last couple of hours.
Okay, it's what we're speaking, so I wouldn't like to confuse anybody here. So, anyway, I can't sort of agree which one is which version, but the most recent version is up on the screen, and that's what we are talking about. So, Paul, I would like to ask you, if you have comments to that version, please do so. and maybe there's a duplication in relation to version 2 or so. I'm not aware of that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Paul, perhaps you could just speak to your comments, because I know I didn't have time to look at them. I know I was asleep until 10 minutes before this call. So maybe you could just give us a brief rundown.
Look, I suggested some alternative wordings to the alternative words under principles. So the alternative words seem to require some structure and a bit of editing for clarity. I felt that the last part about the ICG region with a small minority disagreed was rather unclear, and I actually went ahead and proposed something which I referred to, which I put forward rather boldly, I thought bravely, as a definition of rough consensus, which actually is a numerical definition requiring the support of 450 of the members, including 100% of the customer community members. But you probably would have to look at the specific sort of fine-grained edits that I did on principles for those to be considered.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Well, I will take that into consideration. Well, I can't see that right now, but I take it into consideration and will update that accordingly, and we can follow up this discussion. The next one is, is Alisa, are you still?
Yes, I'm in the queue. I have some other things to say, but I'm not
please.
Next, I don't think. I think Milton was before me.
Okay, then Milton, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes,
can you hear me now? All right. So first, Paul, if you post a new document 1 hour before the meeting starts, you should not be surprised that people haven't seen it yet. So I'm reviewing your document and comparing it to what Wolf has proposed. And I think I like the alternative language in Wolf's the best, although there are some simplifications of, you know, editorial reasons for preferring some of your language. But to keep the debate on a conceptual level, I'm not sure I want to say, even though I have supported the idea of customer groups being somewhat privileged in the outcome, I'm not sure I would be willing to say that 100% of those members would be able to, would be required to reach a conclusion. I think that the agreement that I was willing to go with was something as that if everybody in a particular customer group didn't like a solution, then that would be sufficient to kill it. But the idea that every single customer community member on the ICG has veto power, I'm not comfortable with at all. The other thing that I would say to Wolf is that I really like the language. I think I'm fighting with somebody to scroll here. Identify possible ways in which a proposal could be modified to make it acceptable to them. In other words, this was in Martin's original language. Yes, if you're going to object to something, I think you have a responsibility to identify how it could be modified. So if we could retain that language, I would like it. That's all from me for now.
Thanks, Milton. Well, just to understand, so your drawing trying to are more to support Martin's text at all. And did you provide in written form also your suggestion with regards to the alternate wording?
No, I was saying that in your draft that you had up here on the Adobe, I like the alternative language better than the original language. It's just that bullet point about identifying possible ways in which the proposal could be modified to make it acceptable, I think that should be retained from Martin's original language.
Okay. Good. Thank you. I see Joseph, please.
Thank you. I guess my concern goes to, I have no problem with suggesting that the customer communities have a, or the what we call the operational communities have a special place and need to be on board, and you know, whether that's on board in terms of their representatives in our group, on board, you know, not everybody in the community is on board, but the vast majority of that community is on board. That we'll have to figure out, but I fully understand why those communities need to be in that place. My concern is when we go to a numbers decision, whether it's in terms of calling it a minority or calling it four-fifths, there is a possibility that a small group could be representative of the majority of business and non-business end users. And it becomes problematic if, because numerically their representation is small on the committee, their voice is extinguished. So I'm a little concerned if we don't take into account the fact of if large segments of a group are having an issue, that is also an issue with consensus in terms of what will be accepted when this goes out writ large. And I think we do need to capture a way, not so that any single organization can hold this hostage, but that if you have, you know, representative groups that may be numerically small, but representing a large segment, there's an issue there as well, and we need to figure out how to deal with that. And I don't, unfortunately, I'm suggesting a problem without an answer, and I'm sorry for that because I don't know what the solution is. I mean, it could be that if we went to a numerical calculation, it would be four-fifths of individuals and four-fifths of organizations or something like that. So at least we have a threshold, so it's not just how many representatives you have in terms of physical people, but how many organizations are part of the consensus. That might help alleviate the problem. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. And, well, I would like, following Jean-Jacques' chat, to remind all of you, please, to say I say your name at the beginning for the transcript. Thank you. So, Joe, thank you. Well, this is one of the key issues, really, to set a threshold or define the threshold in finding and developing the decisions or conclusions we have to do. And also related to the specific role of several communities, maybe, or stakeholders, or what else. If you look at the composition of the group, you see that we have, I think, at least 13, if I may, stakeholder groups. So stakeholder group meaning, well, representatives of RSEC and GNSO and so on. So these are 13 different ones, and they play a role in a combined role in some respects. So, like maybe CCNO and GNSO and others throughout the naming questions and others. So it would be helpful if we could find a key how to allocate those groups or to a specific point. Where we have to take conclusions on, well, that would be helpful. I tried that. I couldn't find that at the time being, but that may be a way we should think about later. So, thank you first. Well, I see Jean-Jacques next. Jean-Jacques, please. I can't hear you.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello? Can you hear me? Thank you. Yes, this is Jean-Jacques Chivronat speaking. Thank you. 2 points. I think it was Joe, but I'm not sure because names were not given at the beginning. I think Joe said something like
groups represented. I'm concerned that this would lead to a sort of weighting positions expressed, which would be rather complicated. I think we have to stick to the notion that there is a given number of ICG members, and it is that which really counts. I say this also because I find that the whole idea of consumer or customer communities is important from the point of view of the operational entities, of course, but by underlining this too strongly, in certain cases it eliminates or sidelines other important elements in our group, that is the user community. That was my first remark. My second remark is about the paper we are seeing on the screen just now, and I would like to refer to the paragraph entitled Principles, that is currently under 4, Methodology for Making Decisions, and there is the part entitled Principles. The second bullet point says, recourse to any form of voting should be the exception, and then there's an explanation for that. So I now request that we add, or whoever is holding the pen on this, should add that a member of the ICG can request voting to be taken on any specific item or something to that effect, because we don't want to simply say voting is unhealthy. We also want to say voting is possible if and when that becomes necessary. I say this because right at the beginning of our joint work, I had asked for voting to be installed for a limited number of topics or items. One of them was deciding on the chair structure and also on populating the chair structure, because I thought that was important. That is over now, and congratulations to those who were elected. But there still may be cases where it would be much clearer to require voting. Now, voting means that everyone has the obligation to take the vote, but can of course say yes or no or abstain. And when abstaining, choose to provide or not to provide an explanation for the abstention. So I request now that something to this effect be included under principles bullet point 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. And I take that into consideration as well. I think we're mostly running out of time on that topic, but Alida had to cut that if that is really the case. I would like as well to come to the floor, to get the floor to Martin, because he was providing the part of the principles, and maybe afterwards we can finish with that topic and continue on the list to discuss it. Martin, please.
Martin Boyle here, but I would flag that Alyssa was in the queue and has been patiently waiting for her turn. Does Alyssa want to go first?
Go ahead. I'll put my comments to the list since we're running out of time. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Thanks very much, Alyssa. Firstly, because I suggested the initial set of principles, I'll put my hand up and say I'm quite happy with the revised wording that came through with the, and I thank Milton for flagging the requirement for people who are holding out on getting to a form of consensus. to identify the way that they think proposals could or should be modified to make them acceptable to them. So I would like to see that one collected into the final version. I've also been quite hostile to the idea of ending up being pushed into voting, particularly where there is perhaps quite a delicate balance between the different sides. I don't like voting because it ends up with losers, and it's the cheat's way out because we go for a majority view. No matter how stupid the majority, it risks people not being led, not being taken into account, and looking for some proper balance and fully agreed output. But the idea that you then have a custom community needing to at least be in full agreement, yes, I think that perhaps is then a way of us getting to a point of saying, yes, okay, there is the safeguard, I could accept in some cases. I would still always go back, though, to the fact that I would much prefer not to see us going to a vote unless there is a very, very good reason for it, or if it is just a local administrative concern of a committee like our chair structure, like selecting chairs and co-chairs. I think those were the only points I had on my list that I was concerned of. So thanks very much.
So thank you, Mark, very much. Alida, to speak to you, well, I saw it before your hand. Well, I saw it, but it's just left hand. But it maybe you would like to comment as well, please.
This is Alyssa. I will defer my own comments to the list and try to figure out how to put my hand down or have Alex put my hand down for me. We do really need to move on. We did have the earlier question to Heather about the GAC and voting, and so and I think it's important to hear from her. So I would say we give her the last word and then move on to the next topic.
Okay, thank you. Heather, please.
Thank you very much. I will be brief. So to the extent that I can offer further points, in terms of voting generally, I think the GAC and certainly in my view, we have quite a bit of hesitation when it comes to voting, and I think that's generally speaking. So the instinct of the government side of things is very much to focus on consensus and consensus processes and so on. And I think Martin was very clear in his comments about seeing the emphasis really needing to be on working towards consensus and not exiting that kind of a process too early on. So I think generally speaking, this is really the way that governments tend to look at processes for coming to some kind of decision on the point about consensus. And then in particular, if the question is I'm calling a narrow question, so if you're talking about the vote, the process there for electing a particular candidate, or if there's a doodle poll that's asking a very, very pointed question, it's unlikely that the participants at the GAC have put forward to participate in the ICG would be able to vote. As I mentioned when we had our our meetings in London, people that have been put forward for CAC are not really there to express a national view. And so then that comes back to this question about voting on a particularly narrow question. I do think when we're talking about consensus that it's quite possible, and what the contact group, which is comprised of the participants in the ICG from the GAC and the leadership of the GAC, which includes the vice chairs and so on, what we will endeavor to do is to convey a view, and it may be possible that there are options or that there are particular views expressed more than one in what comes back to the ICG. But I think that should be seen as positive and a way to get input on more substantive issues. So the contact group will be wanting to guide the GAC as well as involving individual governments and those that are not members of the GAC or conducting some kind of outreach to help with that aspect of things. It's clear that there are individual governments that that do expect to participate or submit input, however that happens. And we have had questions about the public comment processes that might be available as this process moves forward. So, again, I think that's also positive. I found it very useful to hear from Joe on the list and the questions that were raised there about silence and how that should be understood. And this point has been taken on by me, and that I think whenever we are able, then if the GAC participants are not going to express the view or quote unquote vote, that we should really do our utmost to explain so that there can be understanding about what that particular silence means, or to explain how we will be providing input into those kinds of issues. So I hope that is helpful, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. And before I hand over to Alyssa, which I would like to come back to, because Alyssa already commented on the list very strongly, and I understand that from a chair's point of view, that you would like to have a clear basis, well, where to go and how to go. That means, with regards, if we discuss rounds for rounds and up to and try to find a consensus, then the question is when it shall end, when shall we terminate it, and how it shall be terminated, and it must be terminated once to come to a conclusion. So that's one thing, and that's also what I understand here from the discussion with regards to how voting or the different kinds of expressing their voice, is going to be handled. That has to be prepared in the document a little bit more. More detail. This is one thing. And on the other hand, it's always a question, if it comes to kind of whatever you call it, voting or polling, or in rare cases, something which means that people say, vote or prefer the one or the other, then the question is, well, maybe in which cases shall we define those cases or not? And I would like to bring that up, maybe in a kind of list, and some topics which have been mentioned already here, could be put on that list for discussion. So, Alyssa.
Yes, thank you. This is Alyssa. Thank you very much, Wolf. I think that was a productive discussion. I know that people have a desire to kind of wrap this up and move on, not least of those myself. But I do think this was productive, and we should give ourselves a little bit of time, I think, to, you know, kind of refine some of these things on the mailing list. So I would suggest that, you know, maybe by the time people are getting on the airplane to go to Turkey, we set a deadline, so, you know, sometime next week, middle of next week, to say we want to have this done, and see if we can make it there, and everyone kind of make their suggestions with that in mind, that we're trying to close on this. I will send a few suggestions because I know that I'm, you know, one of the people who has some outstanding issues, and it sounds like there are a couple others as well. So hopefully we can get this wrapped up next week. So let's move on to the charter, which is Yari is going to lead the discussion on the charter. Yari, we have eaten away a lot of your time, so let's see how quickly we can talk about the charter.
Oh, this is simple. I'm going to share the document. Just a moment. There we go. And so first off, this came in pretty late, like an hour before the call, and my apologies. It took longer than expected. And but the approach that I took was that I looked at everything that I had seen, all the comments, and if I missed any, please let me know, and tried to understand what they were saying and try to categorize them a little bit, basically to editorial or minor issues or major objections, at least from the point of view of the person who is objecting, and then things that are outside the scope of the charter. One example of that is that there was a couple of comments that I think were more related to the solution that we are supposed to get by next year rather than the charter. And I think that those should be deferred for other things. And if we look at the second to last page of this document that I'm showing you, there's a summary of suggested changes. I'll just very briefly go through this and then show you the document itself, the suggested modifications, and there aren't too many, a very small number. And then I'll also finally take you to some other issues that in my opinion, I wouldn't do anything based on them. I want you to know about them, make sure that we all agree. And for the record, just the setup for this request for feedback was that if you have a major objection, then we should consider it. But this is not an opportunity for rewrites or stylistic changes or small things. So I've been, in my recommendations, and it's of course up to you guys eventually, but my recommendation, I was, shall we say, a little bit heavy-handed in deciding that, okay, this is something that we need to really do, and then deciding that the other things we can ignore. Anyway, so the few things that I thought that definitely deserved addressing somehow are on this page that you see now. And the first one, Richard Hill, is about the other input that we get from outside operational communities. And as you know, the charter does ask for that input, but it doesn't actually do anything with that. I think it's actually a bug in the charter. We need to be aware of what the overall community opinion is. And so I am suggesting a sentence on that. The other thing that came up in, I think, several points was whether dissenting views should be documented or not. I think, personally, I think that's good practice. And it doesn't take away from the weight of the overall recommendation if there's broad support for that. But I don't think that's a charter issue. We already have the other document that is talking about the consensus process, so that can be dealt with there. The same with some requests that came that we should have a link to where the parallel discussion on accountability is going. And I guess we could add a link to the charter if we had one. I'm not sure if there's any stable link for that discussion that would last for like the next year. I'd rather have that link in the IECG webpage than in the charter. And then there was a comment from Sean that if there is a need to update a proposal from a particular community, let's say, from the ITS, during the ICT process, we detect a problem with that proposal. We send it back to the ITS and have them make a change that corrects a particular issue. Then when it comes back, it should be subject to whatever review and verification steps are taken for proposals. Anyway, which I think is reasonable. There was a couple of editorial details regarding the information sharing part. First of all, that it's mandatory, not an optional thing, and something about the website. Those are indeed editorial and minor, but I think we could easily accept them. And then a big comment was also, and I think this came from many sources, was that we should be more specific about the relationship of our work and the accountability work. And I mean, there's good reasons why we're being a little bit vague there. However, I think one way of resolving that comment would be to add some text to the part where we evaluate or assess the proposals and indicate that the overall concept of the whole that we gather from the parts actually needs to deal with those aspects of accountability that are relevant for the INA function. Not all parts of accountability that anyone could ever think about within ICANN, but those parts are relevant for INA. So suggesting adding that. And then finally, several people commented that there should be enough time for commenting, and they took this 1 week example of the charter review as a negative example, although in my view, the charter has been out there for a month. So I think people have had time to look at that. But again, that's something where we have a separate document in process, and not something that we should specify in the charter that by this date you have to do things. It's a good practice in projects to separate tasks and not put everything in the same document. I think we can deal with this separately. And now I'll show you the edits. Then I think we can open it up for comments. Just a moment. Okay, so, and I hope you guys are seeing my scrolling, by the way. So this is the charter, the first page, and there's no substantive change there. I'll actually have to go through the whole thing until page 5, I think, to find the first change, and here it is. And this is the part where we add a requirement about the accountability being there as well. So we're talking about the whole that we put together from the pieces. And then we say the whole also needs to include sufficient accountability mechanisms for running the INA function. And then a little later, further down here, it says if changes are required to fix problems in a particular component, then we send it to the particular operational community, rework, and then updates are subject to the same verification, review, and consensus processes as the initial proposals. That's to sort of lock the loophole that we updated it, and now we don't have to do any public review or anything. I don't think that's appropriate. And then finally, on the last page, the information sharing, I've deleted the word should, and I've added the words publicly accessible and open in front of website sign change. So those were the things that I personally gathered from the comments that we got. There might be additional things that we should cover, but I think this will be a good time to talk about whether this set of changes is reasonable in people's minds. So I see a few people. Alyssa, do you want to run the queue or should I?
Go ahead, you can run it.
Okay, Candy? Should I do something in order to enable a person to speak, or can he just speak?
He should just be able to speak. Jen Deere?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, so please. First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for putting that charter together. And at the outset, please bear in mind that my comments should not be interpreted as the GAC input, but rather as the views from the government in my region, my own, on the issues at stake. And when revising our draft charter, in particular the suggestion that the ICG substantive work should be done among the communities most affected by the IANA functions, the domain names, numbers, and the protocol parameters, well, I'm compelled to think about the public policy-related implications of the transition of IANA stewardship away from the NTIA. And even though governments indeed do not have a role to play in the day-to-day operational matters of the IANA functions, I believe that it might defeat the purpose for which the ICG was established if the ICG operation were to be guided by a purely technical perspective without the necessary political endorsement. And let me explain what I'm saying in more detail. I fully understand that the relevant community in the ICG for GAC purposes to deal with issues of substance is the domain names. And by the way, we look forward to working closely and with a very aggressive timetable with the GNSO and the CCNSO on that important responsibility. But let me recall, however, that the U.S. decision to announce its intention to transition its stewardship over the key internet domain name function to the global multi-stakeholder community was mainly driven by political and not technical motivation. And at least this I believe, and this is the view from my country, that this is an additional reason why government views, concerns, and positions should be duly taken into account in the decisions regarding both the ICG's working methods and the substance of its discussions. And let me underline one point about that. This view is totally compatible with the NTIA announcement. You folks should recall that this announcement did not say there should be no governmental influence in the process, but rather that the solution should not be intergovernmental informed. I just would like to raise this point before we get into the details of the draft charter. Thank you.
And I just wanted to quickly respond and say that you didn't say anything that I disagreed with. I think that's exactly right. And you also mentioned that you look forward to working together with the CNSO and others. And I think that's exactly the right approach, make sure that the concerns and thoughts you guys have are included. So I guess this is a question. Do you have a specific thought in mind that we haven't covered something in the charter that prevents you doing that, or do we have a problem, or is it, are you just expressing how you would like to work?
Well, thank you. I just expressed the views of my country. As I said, this is not a GAC input. And as I said, this was important to us, so we'd like to raise this point. And I'll definitely work together with the CCNSO and the GNSO on these issues, and we'll try our best to see this point reflected in our comments and our suggestions to the draft charter. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. I think you will be able to do that, what you were wanting to do. And then
Okay, moving forward. Plato?
No. Yes.
Milton first.
Should I go ahead?
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You were Milton. You were first. I just got confused because the list changed.
Okay, so I'll go ahead then. This is Milton Mueller, the representative of the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group from the GNSO. I will say a few things about Jandis's comment because it's really a meta-comment, and I want to focus mainly on the actual charter. So I want to say first that I read every one of the comments, and I think that in terms of distilling those comments into specific changes in the charter, I think that, Yara, you've done a perfect job. I agree with everything that you've proposed here. I think the point I would want to make is that a lot of the comments about the accountability issue are really misunderstanding the role of the charter. As you correctly note in your comments, Yari, it's not the purpose of the charter to provide a detailed mechanism by which we intersect with the other accountability process. The charter is simply saying, what is our broad outlines of our activities? It cannot go into detail. It's not an operational set of rules or regulations or bylaws, nor is it a detailed process. It's a charter. It's telling us what our basic job is. So I think some of the people making comments did not understand that sufficiently and were really loading a lot of concerns onto the charter debate that actually belong elsewhere. If people are concerned about how we deal with the accountability process, the other accountability process, or with how we handle accountability, in the actual proposal we submit to the NTIA, then they should get involved in those processes where they're actually taking place. The enhanced accountability process is taking place, it's just being established by ICANN, so of course we cannot define a detailed mechanism for intersecting with it. And the specific proposals that create accountability for IANA will of course come out of these operational communities and there are other participants that will not come out of the ICG, so I wanted to make that clear. And that, to conclude, leads me to the point made by the Brazilian representative, which is he's concerned about the so-called public policy issues related to the IANA transition. Well, the primary public policy issue of the IANA transition is simply that we had one government in charge of it, and that government was in a position to circumvent or veto policies coming out of the ICANN community. And the main political objective of this process is to put an end to that situation. And so it's not like there are inherently public policy issues in the way IANA implements policies that are coming out of ICANN or the IETF or the numbers community. Indeed, that's the whole point of this transition, is that the IANA should not be a policy-making entity, and it should not be a veto point for circumventing policies. If GAC members or the government of Brazil is concerned about the public policy implications of DNS or any other part of the Internet, they should work in the policy-making communities, and our job is to make sure that the IANA process accurately and securely implements those policies, not change them. That's all.
Thank you, Milton. James.
Hi, good morning. James speaking for the transcript. And just a couple of quick comments. One observation from the Brazilian GAC member, I think that, you know, contrasting the interests of public policy interests versus technical interests, I would put a third leg under that stool, which would be the commercial and economic implications of IANA transfer. I think that is something that cannot be entirely disregarded. I don't think it really has a home in our charter, but it's just something that perhaps could set the foundation and context for our work. And I just wanted to make a, I hope, a minor editorial suggestion that will go a long way to establishing some clarity here. Whenever we introduce the term accountability into our charter, I would like to propose that we also include the adjective independent accountability mechanisms. I think that one of the things that I'm seeing recently is that the word accountability is in danger of being overused and overloaded to the point where its meaning starts to become diluted. And I think that tying it to the concept of independence, because that is what the IANA function traditionally provided, was independent accountability mechanism on the policymaking functions. And if we're going to include the term accountability, I think that we should identify that it's independent. So that's my comment. Thank you for it.
Thank you. I have no strong objection to that. I wonder if other people on the call, what they think about that. The big problem with accountability in general has been that there's different types of accountability, either accountability of the policy process or accountability of the IANA function, which is what we should be focused on here. I'm fine adding the word independent to the text if others agree. Maybe we can talk about that on the list. Mohammed.
Mohammed Bashir for the Transcript. Thank you for the perfect summary that you gave us. I have just one comment on the document. There was a discussion on the mailing list and also on the RFP regarding ICG decision, or at least tendency to make decision about who should submit proposals and what proposals from which communities to be selected. And there was a couple of discussions on the mailing list about us avoiding to clearly identify that and basically allowing other communities to submit if they wish to submit. The part, I think the second page of the charter, where it lists the main task. The reference here is policy to the operation of communities. I think myself and others, and we all understand that this is a very critical transition in, for the operation of community. And definitely their input is crucial. And their proposal, either jointly or separate proposal, is really critical for the success of this exercise. So this part need to be aligned with the RFP and the discussion currently we're having on the RFP regarding the submission, who's able to submit the proposal. So we have two documents that are consistent. So that's my comment here. And I think earlier I suggested maybe referencing communities and also directing communities to the current processes, but we might be in a difficult position later on if we receive the proposal that doesn't fit within the community's channel. And I think there was Martin and Manal have raised valid points. Martin has raised valid points about CCLDs who are not part of or not members of the CCNR. So I just wanted to raise the issue of consistency between the two documents in our approaches. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's a valid point. And I now also realize that in this Charter V8 document, I actually forgot one thing, which I had suggested to be done, which is the sentence that the ICC should also compile the input it has received beyond the operational communities and assess the impacts of this input. And maybe that, in part, helps you with your issue as well. That's indeed missing from VA. It is now. Okay. And I don't see other hands up at the moment. Alisa, do you want us to stop here, or do you want me to go to my list of other things that I did not recommend the adult comments?
I think we should stop here, and for the sake of time, we have a few more topics to get to. But I'm wondering, as far as proceeding, how you would like to proceed, if you feel that we need to have list discussion about the other things before we can sort of call for any objections to adopting this, or do you think we can do that now, modulo a few more edits that might get made based on our discussion today?
I think, yeah, so I'll have to do one more edit because of the one that I forgot, and then the word independent that was discussed. Maybe we could discuss those on the list, but I wanted to hear from the group if you in general feel that this edit is roughly what we need for because of the comments period, or if there's anything major that's missing other than the ones that have already been discussed today. And feel free to speak now if you want something more or if something's broken. So I'll take silence as agreement.
So Joe and Paul raise their hands.
Joe first.
Joe.
Joe Aladeff with ICC Basis. The only question I had was I thought I remembered in the charter, and it's always hard to read a document to find what you're missing. I thought we had had at one time a reference to one of the purposes was to maintain the stability and operational functionality of the IANA function, which is an important concept to the beneficiaries of IANA as well as to the operational communities. And I just wondered, was I imagining that that was in this document, or did we somehow lose that somewhere in the editing process?
In the first paragraph, it says that the blah, 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 ensure that its proposals support the security and stability of the IANA function,
which was a
shorter version of that.
Okay. I skimmed over that part. Sorry.
Okay. Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot for your work on this. I think it all makes sense. I would like to proceed with publishing whatever we are agreed on and whatever makes sense as soon as it does. I thought we had a general principle, though, that we weren't sort of setting anything in stone, that we would, and that if we take that approach, then we can publish an updated charter and still have the ability to reconcile a few of those remaining points later on as this discussion goes on.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. I thought I certainly heard agreement here during this call. So if I post the one with the two missing edits, and I will have a couple of days of email verification if needed, if people have any issues, and then by the end of this week, we publish this version as the current version, as noted. If next month or sometime later we have an issue, then we can do another edit. Daniel.
Right, thank you.
Daniel. Daniel Karrenberg, you raised your hand.
Hello?
We hear you.
Okay. My only suggestion was to give it like a whole week of comment, not comment, but serious disagreement call rather than to the end of this week. I mean, we just got the whole thing today, and I think we should, while I agree that we need to be quick and we're almost ready, I think we should give it like, at least 5 working days or something like that.
That's reasonable. You can do that.
Um,
Just to support what Daniel just said, maybe it will be a kind of a parallel comment period where we discuss it on the mailing list, and at the same time, the community has the opportunity to do it, so we don't have two processes. So as soon as we finish this meeting, the version we agree on can be published for the community comment. At the same time, we discuss it on the mailing list, and we close it after 5 days, so we don't have two consecutive comment discussion periods.
Well, I'm not sure I want to go sort of publicly on the website and say, hey, there's another comment period, but rather that we agree what it is, and then we put it out, and then if later there's some issue, we can reopen it. But I think it's only up to us right now, because we've gotten the comments that we're going to get.
So this is Alyssa. We really need to move on in the agenda. We have a few things that we're not going to get to that we probably should for the IGF. So can we proceed on the list with this? It sounds like we have rough agreement about what we're going to do. Just need to hammer out a few details.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much, Yari, for all your work on that. So in the interest of time, I think we're going to shake up the agenda a little bit and move on to the Secretariat discussion. I hope we can get to the RFP at the end, but I think we need to talk about the Secretariat and the IGF statement first. And Adiel, we have very little time, so as quickly as we can get through this, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alyssa. I will try to make this quick because globally I think we have a consensus on most of the text of this. What we need to discuss and agree on quickly is how we proceed. This document has been developed with the assumption of a few agreements that we seem to have in London, which is one, first, we contracted an independent company to serve as secretariat. We get funding from ICANN. And there was also a discussion at that time that we should contract that independent secretariat through an independent contractor. So that was the original assumption of this document. Now, from the various discussions we have on the mailing list, I think we have, I'm not sure, right, please raise your hand. We have ruled out the necessity right now to have an independent contractor for the independent secretariat, so which means we can make an independent secretariat contracted by ICANN to do the job. That is what I'm seeing emerging from the discussion. While several people on the mailing list have raised the concern about the timeliness of this process, we need to move very quickly on this to be able to have a secretariat in place. So based on Teresa's comment, there are also some input or some leaning comments toward having ICANN serving as secretariat or ICANN's dedicated staff serving as secretariat, but reporting exclusively to the ICG. So we have those two options on the table right now that we have to agree on. And I think one critical factor to take into consideration while discussing this is the timeline. We have to be realistic and make sure that what we put in place as process work fast and quick, and so we become operational. So I think we need to get agreement on those two questions. Do we want to still have an independent secretariat but contracted by ICANN and funded by ICANN, or are we okay to use dedicated staff from ICANN to serve as secretariat who will exclusively report to the ICG? So that's what I can quickly say. The what is in the text which is projected here is based on that. If we agree here, we can quickly adjust the test to reflect our final decision. So, comments?
Okay.
Any comments on those two questions? Any? I think I have Russ.
Yes.
You, followed by Mohammed.
As I said on the mail list, I really think we need to select the independent secretariat, but of course we have to follow whatever procurement processes and procedures I can normally use.
Okay, so independent secretariat contracted by item.
Correct.
Thank you, Russ. Mohammed?
Yeah, I think we should proceed with the independent secretariat, but for the time being, the support currently provided for ICANN should continue, I think, until we finalize that. My question is about time frames. Do we have any sense of how long and this process could be conducted according to, let's say, ICANN procedures?
I don't have the detail of item procedure, but in the document there was a suggestion, some suggestion that there to be able to, well, this is outdated now, but originally the intention was to have the secretariat selected by the end of August. We still have 1 week or 10 days for that, but I'm not sure. ICANN process can fit into those 10 days. I'm not sure if somebody from ICANN is there that can enlighten us on ICANN process. Teresa?
Yes, Adil. Do you want me to respond to any specific question?
Yes. How long do you think if we issue an RFP from an RFP to a final contract, it will take following ICANN process?
I'll need to revert back to the staff to identify any exact time frames. It would be establishing the RFP based on what the ICG wishes to have in it, a review of that, obviously, a call for a request for input, obviously, from any interested parties, the selection process, and all those steps. With regards to the specific time frame of what you need from the staff, I'll need to revert back and get that answer from them.
Okay, but from what I can, you know, see from what Teresa described in her email just now, this we are talking about something around a month for the whole process. For the RFP, I think we can take most of the things from this document to build the RFP and issue it for submission. So,
right, Adil. What was outlined in the email are the specific areas that need to be looked at, including ensuring budgeting for the process in the context of what the requirements are that are outlined in the RFP, et cetera. So the points identified under the section, should the ICG seek a secretariat function that is separate but funded by ICANN, are the steps that would need to be covered. And then obviously working with the ICG, the time frame whereupon the ICG is reaching agreement on what needs to be in there, and then the process for posting the RFP, receiving expressions of interest from the different parties who may be interested in participating or interested in the role, and then going through whatever process the ICG identifies in a transparent manner to make their selection.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in terms of the selection and the transparency there, I think we can quickly put something together, and some suggestions have already flowed on the mailing list. We will have a very straightforward spreadsheet with a few, you know, notation, and we'll do that. I think it's the issuing the RFP and giving time for people to submit and evaluating them, which will be the
most important. There is also the fact that if after all the submission we haven't found anyone that really can do the job of or proven to be able to do that, we also have to think of plan B right away because I'm not sure. I see Alisa. Alisa, do you have a comment? I see you hold your hand.
Yes, thank you. This is Alisa. So I fully support what has been said already in terms of finding independent contractors, and I think it sounds like we have a lot of support in the group from anyone who's commenting. So I think we should go ahead and start moving on this. You know, as far as the content of the RFP and all that, I would be happy if we set up a little subgroup involving yourself, Adiel, and, you know, any of two or three more people who are interested who can kind of drive this forward if we need to convert it. Oh, I think the text that you have is great. If we need to convert it to be more specific for an RFP purpose, that's fine, and we should just, you know, go ahead and put it out and, you know, solicit proposals from people. I don't think we need to kind of have a, you know, at every single stage of this, we need to get, you know, full ICG consensus or call for support on, you know, each different version that we need to create or whatever. I'm totally happy for a subgroup of people to run this process and deliver a recommendation to the full ICG at the end and, you know, provide some justification for why they're recommending it and move on. So that's what I would suggest that we do.
Good. So for me, it seems like we have a way forward on this. We'll have an independent contractor, an independent secretariat, which will be contracted through ICANN process, and I can respond this. I think a good middle line. And so we'll move on and finalize an RFP that will be published. So I'm happy to work with anyone that would like to join a small working group for secretariat selection process. To continue working on this.
So, Ariel, Russ,
Daniel?
Yeah, this is Daniel. I have my hand up. Sorry, Russ. I'm concerned that this may take longer than we all expect. So what I would like to see is a realistic time plan. You know, I remain still opposed to actually doing all this, and I saw some other people on the mailing list joining in on that, so I don't think we have consensus on moving in this direction. So what I'm requesting is as quickly as possible a realistic estimation of how long this will take.
Well, Daniel, that was the question I put forward for ICANN, because if you're going to use ICANN process to contract this, we have to follow ICANN process. From our side is to put the RFP forward. I think this can be done in a week to have the RFP out there. As soon as that is done, the rest will really depend on the procurement process of ICANN, basically. I'm not seeing this happening in less than 30 days, less than a month, realistically. So we are talking about something by the end of September. In the meantime, I think we'll continue using ICANN as we are using ICANN staff, as we are using as an interim measure. But I think that's what we are left with.
Adiel, could I just ask for one question? What would be helpful receiving also from the ICG is how long they will have the RFP out for to ensure that the information gets out to everybody with adequate time to respond. So that's just a point for consideration as we, as the ICG is looking at the time frame and we're factoring in the different elements, and I can give the respective staff that I need to get time frames from the right information. So that's just a request as well. Thanks.
I think we can issue the RFP for 15 days maximum. That would be my suggestion. Yes?
So this is Alyssa. It sounds like we have a bit of a fast forward. I guess audio, there's a request for putting a timeline out to the mailing list. I think maybe in the meantime, a subgroup can start working on the pieces that need to be done, and we can perhaps continue the discussion on the mailing list about of whether we want to go forward with it. I had actually not seen a couple of the emails this morning on the list about this, so I apologize for characterizing something as having broader support maybe than it did. But I think there's enough people interested in the independent secretariat that we can move forward on that, try to get a timeline out to people, see if that makes anyone more comfortable with it, and continue on the mailing list. Okay.
Okay. That's work for me.
Thank you very much, Adiel. I'd like to move on to Joe, who's going to talk about the IGF statements, and then hopefully we'll have a few minutes at the end to talk about the community's RFP. But since we have the IGF coming up very soon, I thought we should at least begin discussing what our process is going to be for this. So I will turn it over to Joe.
Thanks, Alyssa. There's a panel at the IGF on IANA transition, and while a number of us will be on the panel, it seemed that it would be appropriate to at least, whether to read out or have in the room, a statement that would be kind of an update and the status of where we are, a link to the website that has relevant documents and information about us, the constitution of our group, the way in which we were constituted, et cetera. So what I tried to do in creating a draft document, and this is by no means a draft that is meant to be considered in its form for final, it's the straw man to throw things at in a very rapid fire succession. Essentially, I took some of the elements of the charter to kind of define what we were talking about. I tried to pull together a few of the elements from the RFP at a very topical level to kind of indicate where we were seeking guidance, discussed a little bit of our transparency, and then highlighted from the charter the operational procedures, and we'll have to make sure that the language is consistent with the most recent version of the charter, and then finally have another administrative topic section, which includes the selection of chairs, vice chairs, the description of officer roles, et cetera, which I'm not sure where we're going to be on some of these in terms of their completion. That's what makes this document especially difficult is, some of the stuff I'm referring to is work in progress. And so I can't get too far ahead of it, and I want to make sure that we're discussing it correctly. I also wanted to try to describe that we have participation from both operational communities and what I call the broader stakeholder group, and that they're working together, both have roles and inputs that are being provided. So that's what I tried to capture because I thought that's what some of the thoughts would be. I also think the extent to which we can put down at least a calendar of the next couple of dates that are of relevance to us, that's also useful if people want to try to plan their participation. We also should recognize that for some, there's going to be an issue of how they can participate in our meeting at the IGF because some folks may actually be going home on the day we're meeting. So, we want to make sure that we link to recorded versions of that meeting because some people may be in transit. But that was kind of the concept, and I don't yet know whether this is something that we can read in or whether this is a document that can be circulated. We haven't really approached the organizers to put that in as a formal role, nor have we had an internal discussion as to who the formal spokesperson of this document might be. But I just wanted to kickstart the fact that we need something for the IGF, and this is the straw man to throw things at.
Joe, would you like to run the queue, or?
Oh, if you could run the queue, that would be that would just be great, because I wasn't paying attention to what order things were coming in.
Okay, Milson.
This is Milton Mueller. I appreciate your effort in putting this together, Joe. I think, however, that the I guess I would take a much less formal approach to these talking points. I think, from my point of view, the thing we'll be doing at the IGF is hopefully introducing and showcasing our RFP, which I hope we finish in time for that, and that we will be convincing communities to get involved in that and trying to explain to them our approach to the development of proposals. And it might be much more of a kind of bullet point, PowerPoint kind of a explanation might be much more effective than a formal statement of this sort, which presumably people would read, as a document. I'm not sure how well that would go over in terms of actually bringing the points home that we need interaction on.
Milton, just to answer that, I wasn't sure that we have an opportunity to present it. So I drafted it as a document and agreed that this would not be the way one would read talking points. Talking points would be much shorter than this, much crisper, and hopefully would be something that generated interactive conversation, but I don't have any verification that we will have any opportunity to have formalized talking points that can be read in as part of that transition panel. So I thought it would be useful to at least have something also on the ground that we can use as the basis for what people understand what we're doing. But I would just stay away from PowerPoint slides just because I hate them, but I think we can derive from this a more narrow set of bulleted points that doesn't have as much of the background information.
Okay, well, I guess I would just say that there's some unresolved issues that we might make progress on in the next 10 days. So we should keep this flexible. And again, as much as we all hate PowerPoint, it's just, you put a bullet point up there, it doesn't commit you to a lot, but it does get conversation discussion going. So that's just my approach to it. I'll shut up now.
Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, Lisa. This is Jean-Jacques. Yes, I'd like to follow up on what Milton has just suggested. I think that first of all, we should make sure that there is a possibility at the IGF for this presentation to take place. The second point is that, yes, this seems a bit formal. Thank you, Joe, for drafting this and presenting it, but I think something more user-friendly would be even better. My third point is, as usual, that if there is to be wording, you have to be careful that the IANA clients on the one hand and the rest of the composition of the ICG should not be made out to be too different. I do recognize, Jill, that the wording you have used at the beginning of your text is fair and balanced. I'd just like that to be carried forward in whatever final form is chosen, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation or just speaking from notes. Thanks.
Daniel.
This is Daniel Kahnberg. Just very briefly, I thank you, Joe, again for doing this, but I think it's, I agree with Milton that it needs to be a bit more crisp and have the main points. And I think the main points are our RFP and the fact that we're seeking input through the various communities that are developing proposals, and that we make it very, very clear that participation in developing the proposals should be through those communities and not through the ICG. And I think if we get these points across, then we've done all we need to do, and then we can have, you know, sort of further mentioning our references to our charter, the officers we just elected, and that we're actually having some momentum in this group. But I think it's most important to mention the RFP and the way the final proposal is going to be developed through the communities. I think this needs to be made. And also I would advise against copying too much language. I think referring to it is much, much better.
Can I just remind people that the IGF community is not necessarily a fully ICANN-aware community? And while a lot of folks at the IGF follow these issues, a number of folks may be stumbling in with a curiosity factor. So I agree on talking points. We should be focusing on where we are. But if we do decide to have a document as well, that document needs to include some of the background, because some of the folks looking at it aren't going to be able to put us in context.
Yeah, this is Adele.
Go ahead.
Yes, just to pick on what you just said, and Daniel, I wanted to say that, in fact, what we need is two documents. We need one document which will be an ICG brief, which we can use, we can print and distribute during the whole IGF. That will spread the word and let people know exactly what we are doing. I think we can do that, and we can use, you know, people to even, you know, add more to what is there. So thank you very much for what you have done, Joe. It will be useful for people to know. Then I think one of the major things that people will be interested in a forum like IGF will be the RFP. What exactly we are expecting from people, and what will be the process that the operational community are going to use. I think we should use that opportunity to allow operational community as well to describe what they are planning to do, and we will talk about how we are going to take their input and come up with a proposal, because that's what people are looking for. That's what they are going to question us on. That's what they are going to willing to engage with us on. So maybe we should focus a little bit more on the RFP and have something almost close to final or open for comment during the period we have IGF, so it's already ready out there for comment, so that we can interact with people specifically on the RFP and the timeline for the whole process, because people out there are also asking a lot about the timeline. What is the exact timeline that the ICG is going to use for this? Because the community out there are waiting for that timeline to do their own thing. So I think if we can focus the coming 10 days on the RFP and have it published for comment before IGF, and focus this session on that, that would be very, 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 very useful, and then have this wide background document that can be worked on and published print for wider discussion.
So, Joe, this is Alyssa. I'm very mindful of our time. I think we've gotten a lot of useful input on this, in particular that, you know, we might need both a document and a set of talking points. We should leave it open. We should focus on the RFP and so forth. So we can keep refining this on the list between now and the IGF. I think that's a good plan, if that works for you.
Fine.
I'd like to take – we have 5 minutes. I know people have a hard stop. I do think we should spend 5 minutes talking about the RFP, since everyone wants to get it done or have at least a solid draft of it before the IGF. So let's talk about that for 5 minutes, and we'll go only 1 minute over on wrap-up and make sure that everyone knows what the next steps are. Paul.
Hi, Alyssa, thanks. Okay, this is the latest RFP document that Alice has just thrown up on the screen for us. It's I have taken what became a very messy document with a lot of comments and edits in it. I have made my best effort to reconcile all of those comments and edits, including approving a few of the edits and making a couple of edits that are reflected in the comments there. I think there is one sort of macro issue with this document that still is quite up in the air and that we need to resolve, and that is the question of its the issue is about the process more than the document, but the question is about the openness of the process in terms of how widely we will receive and process responses. Further to that is the question of how really actively inclusive it is. We have defined the customer or operational communities of the IANA quite clearly, but we haven't really defined what is our relationship or the relationship with this process for the other communities. And there are other specific communities that are defined in the composition of the coordination group, of course. Whether or not those communities are explicitly expected to input in their own right, or whether we are really trying to insist that all communities try to enter the process through the existing operational communities. Now, I'm leaning myself towards openness, but I'm not, I'm not really trying to create a situation of an impossible task for us here. But I think the comments to the document were pretty much, they were largely leaning towards a more open situation, expressing concerns that if we appear to be overstructuring and over-constraining those who could contribute, then we really would not be creating the right impression. So, look, I think that's it by way of explanation. There's still an open question as to, really, in particular, the communities outside of the operational communities and how they should be invited or included or approached. And then I think the rest are really a bunch of details. Now, if we had time, I would have planned to go through this document in some detail. We don't have time to do that, so I can see there's a discussion going on in the chat at the moment about having another call. I think that sounds like a good idea. Milton is trying to speak.
Okay. This is Milton Mueller again. Just very quickly, yes, we were having a debate about the degree to which the processes should be led by the operational communities, and I see in this draft you've sort of taken a position on that, which I'm glad to see that you recognize is not really a consensus position yet, just that you're making that proposal. One issue that I think is very important to me that I want to address, you have the identity of the community in this checklist, and to me that checklist was not about the identity of the community, or should not be about the identity. It is about what the proposal actually addresses. Are we making proposals about numbers or names or protocols? I definitely do not want this to be about the identity of the community. It seems to me, particularly when we get into trying to categorize people into other affected communities, we are encouraging people to just talk to their own group, work in a silo, and come up with their own proposal, and we just don't want to do that. We want to develop, we want the process feeding into our process to be as broad-based and consensus-based as possible. So I would reframe that whole section zero to say just what is this proposal about, not what is the identity of your community.
Glad to hear that.
And now I have to
I really do agree with you.
So, Paul, we are at the hour, and I want to be respectful of people's time. I appreciate you highlighting this issue. I do think we just have this, we have this one major issue, and the others are pretty minor. We're having a little side chat about maybe having a call next week to try and resolve this. I think we can take that to the list, and also we should continue this discussion on the list, but it does strike me as something that might need a little bit of real-time interaction to really finish on. But, you know, if we do that next week and we really do finish, then we'll have something at least in a very stable draft form before the IGF, which sounds like a lot of people want to have. So I'll send the mail about, you know, possibly sending another call, and I think in the meantime we should really push on this on the mailing list, see if we can get to a resolution. Does that make sense?
That's to me, yeah.
Great. Thanks. With that, I think we will wrap up. I will ask Alice to publish the attendance list to the mailing list, and if you don't see yourself there and you were on the call, or if you do see yourself there and you were not on the call, then you know, please respond to that so we have the proper list of who was in attendance. And Samantha was taking notes, and we'll be circulating minutes, and we'll go through the same process for minutes approval. Otherwise, I think we have a couple of action items. We're going to try to wrap on the consensus document next week, also on the charter. Joe has, I think, an action item to work on some talking points and keep driving on the IGF statement. And we'll close on the RFP and hopefully next week set up the call. And Adiel has, I think, the action on the secretariat. So thanks to everyone for all your hard work on this. We'll see you in Istanbul.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks.
Cheers.